But, all right. Well, one of the reasons why we sang the songs we did is because of where we're going tonight. A ongoing problem that we have in here with Jacob and with Isaac and with Abraham and all of them is they're not very honest people. They're very deceptive people. And even though they trust God, ultimately when it comes to do with their provision, God providing for them, you can even see that in Jacob. He seemed to have confidence God would make him rise to the top, but he had no confidence that God would protect him. And that seemed to be the same problem that Abraham had, the same problem that Isaac had. So it's an ongoing problem. And so protection, it illustrates something that we've seen in our own lives, that we have areas where faith just seems to come automatic and very simple to us. Mm-hmm. And other areas, it's like an albatross. It's like the most impossible thing in the world. Mm-hmm. And you'll look at another person who can't believe like you can in an area, and you're like, I don't understand why they can't get that. It's the easiest thing in the world. But, you know, if you look far enough, chances are they're strong in an area you're weak, and they're saying the same thing about you. Mm-hmm. You know, and the bottom line is that I'm also partially convinced that God also, part of this is by God's design, because God doesn't want any of us to act independent of each other. Because, mm-hmm. you know what, if you have a grace of God to understand him in an area that I don't understand him and it's tough for me, then you know what, I would be wise to hang out with you and let you rub off on me. Mm-hmm. Hello?
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and you'd be wise to hang out with me and let me wear off on you.
Yeah.
And we can strengthen one another in faith, yeah. in our trust. Because I'll begin to see the Father the way you see him.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, faith is going to be, well, I don't know why that was so hard for me.
Yeah.
You know, and the same thing will happen with you. See, this is part of encouraging one another and strengthening one another in the Lord. Yes, Stephen?
Just like that with churches. Mm-hmm. One church wholeheartedly believes in this and knows this really good,
mm-hmm.
but doesn't believe that. And mm-hmm. this church believes in that and wholeheartedly feels good, but doesn't believe in something else. But instead of, you know, loving each other and embracing our differences and learning from each other, yeah. there's walls.
That's right.
Can't go to that. That's a Baptist church. We don't go to mm-hmm. Baptist church.
Yeah.
They do crazy stuff in church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and this one's all, you know, structured. And, mm-hmm. how do you find God when you're all structured?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you know what? Both of you are right.
Mm-hmm.
Love each other and learn from each other.
Absolutely. And that's the way God designed it to be. But we're not going to see that in this particular couple of chapters, but it is something we need to walk away with in them. So let's go ahead and start in chapter 30. I will go ahead and read the chapter, and then we will do our comments and stuff like that, and then go on to 31. I imagine we'll definitely end on 31 because 32 picks up in an area that really kind of deserves its own time and space. So give me a second to turn there. The Genesis chapter 30. Yes, I'm sorry. What?
Chapter
30.
Genesis.
We're starting in Genesis chapter 30. All right, starting in verse 1, Genesis 30, starting in verse 1. Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, "Give me children or else I will die." And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel. And he said, "Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" So she said, "Here is my maid Bilhah. Go into her, and she will bear a child on my knees, that I may also have children by her." Then she gave him Bilhah, her maid, as wife, and Jacob went into her, and Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. And then Rachel said, "God has judged my cause, and he has also heard my voice and given me a son." Therefore, she called his name Dan. And Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. Then Rachel said, "With great wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and indeed I have prevailed." So she called his name Naphtali. When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob his wife. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, "A troop comes." So she called his name Gad. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. Then Leah said, "I am happy, for the daughters will call me blessed." So she called his name Asher. Then, now Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. But she said to her, is it a small matter that you've taken away my husband? Would you also take away my son's mandrakes as well? And Rachel said, therefore he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes. Then Jacob came up out of the field in the evening. Leah went out to meet him and said, you must come into me, for I have hired you with my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. And God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. Now, Leah said, God has given me my wages because I have given my maid to my husband. So she called his name Issachar. Then Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons. So she called his name Zebulun. Afterwards, she bore a daughter and called her name Dinah. Then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. So she called his name Joseph and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. And it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said to Laban, send me away that I may go to my own place into my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go, for you know my service which I have done for you. And Laban said to him, please stay, if I have found favor in your eyes, for I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake. Then he said, name me your wages, and I will give it. So Jacob said to him, you know how I have served you and how your livestock has been with me. For what you had before I came was little, and it has increased to a great amount. The Lord has blessed me since my coming, blessed you since my coming. And now, when shall I also provide for my own house? So he said, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. If you will do this one thing for me, I again will feed and keep your flocks. Let me pass through all of your flock today, removing from there all the speckled and spotted sheep, and all the brown or dark ones among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and these shall be my wages. So my righteousness will answer for me in time to come, when the subject of my wages comes before you. Every one that is not speckled or spotted among the goats and brown among the lambs will be considered stolen if it is with me. And Laban said, oh, that it were according to your word. So he removed that day the male goats that were speckled and spotted, all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had some white in it, and all the brown ones among the lambs, and gave them into the hands of his sons. Then he put 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. Now Jacob took for himself rods of green poplar, and of the almond and chestnut trees, peeled white strips in them, and exposed the white which was in the rods. And the rods which he had peeled, he set before the flocks in the gutters, and in the watering troughs where the flocks came in to drink, so that they should conceive when they came to drink. So the flocks conceived before the rods, and the flocks brought forth streaked, speckled, and spotted offspring. Then Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face towards the streaked, and all the brown in the flock of Laban. But he put his own flocks by themselves and did not put them with Laban's flock. And it came to pass, whenever the stronger livestock conceived, that Jacob placed the rods before the eyes of the livestock in the gutters, that they might conceive among the rods. But when the flocks were feeble, he did not put them in, so the feebler were Laban's, and the stronger became Jacob's. Thus the man became exceedingly prosperous, and had large flocks, female and male servants, and camels and donkeys. So now, we're going to let you guys give comment, and we'll do a little bit of review on chapter 30 before we go into 31. So what are your thoughts, starting preferably with the beginning of the chapter?
Oh, what turmoil.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, between his family, wives, and everything, and Laban, his...
father-in-law.
Oh my gosh, there's just strife.
Yeah, lots of strife.
Well, we weren't sure what mandrakes were.
They're like apples.
So we looked it up. But they're also were considered back in that day to be an aphrodisiac.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm.
So it was like playing around with the trump card,
Mm-hmm.
We'll give them this and we'll get what we want out of it.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But
that's right.
Also,
manipulation.
Yeah. But when it came time and Jacob decided to leave,
mm-hmm.
and separate, he didn't want anything that belonged to Laban.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Give me my wives and my kids and you can have it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? He wasn't going to allow anybody to say that even though all this time had passed, Laban
mm-hmm.
became very powerful and wealthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Jacob was not going to be let it said
mm-hmm.
that Laban
made him rich.
Made him rich.
Yeah. And that's something he had in common with his father Abraham, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, one thing we know for sure is this group of people didn't have a problem with believing that God would take care of them concerning money and prosperity, which that's still kind of a Jewish thing today.
Yeah.
Jews don't have a problem knowing they're going to make money.
Yeah.
So go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Keep on if you have any.
No, but that's that's basically kind of where I was going.
Yeah.
That I guess the next step actually trips over into the next chapter, but
mm-hmm.
that I'm done. I've been here long enough. You
mm-hmm.
know,
yeah.
You've tricked me into one, and I paid that debt. Then I got the second, and I paid that debt.
Yeah.
And time has marched on, and I'm ready to go home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
Laban knows where his bread's buttered.
Oh, yes, he does.
And
yes.
He doesn't want to go.
No, he doesn't. And one thing that is interesting here that Jacob doesn't pick up on is the leverage he has. He didn't pick up on it. He was still afraid of Laban. Laban laid it out there, didn't he? He said, you know what? Don't leave, because I know the only reason I'm prospering is because of you. That should have keyed Jacob's mind saying, oh, I have leverage here. But it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
He still allowed himself to be pulled around with a ring in the nose by his father-in-law because he was afraid of him. And it comes out of his own mouth in the next chapter, I'm afraid of you. So he was not allowing God to be his God in that area. There's no question about that. That's very evident. So what are the thoughts? Yeah, Terry.
One of the things to add to what Nancy was saying about the mandrakes was I began to think, wondering if not only was it an aphrodisiac, but maybe there was something to or a legend of or a hope in that it may have also helped Rachel conceive.
I don't know.
And one of the commentaries, I did read that,
mm-hmm.
it was also considered something that would help
fertility.
Conceive. So that would explain one of the reasons why she wanted it so badly, because
yeah.
it was like a last-ditch effort to
mm-hmm.
try to give him a son.
Yeah.
And who knows, it was after her, she had those that she ended up getting pregnant, so there may have been something to it.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know
what used
kind
it,
of time
but,
frame was there. But.
Yeah.
But with Rachel, you're talking about Rachel?
Yeah, uh-huh.
But in here it says that God...
Yeah, but God, I think what she's getting at is that God may have used that. Because there are things in nature that God has placed there on purpose for certain reasons, and that might be one of them. So, I mean, it's entirely possible that the reason why Reuben even found them is because God directed them there, knowing what the outcome would be.
Do you know what the purpose of the wood in the troughs is?
Yes, I'll deal with that in a minute. But yes, that's a good thought. Yes, I know what that is. Anyone else? Yeah. Huh?
I'm sorry, I'm backing up.
That's okay, no.
With the sibling rivalry between Rachel and Leah, it's really difficult. I mean, it's common. You see it even today as far as sibling
oh, yeah.
rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
And one's jealous of the other one. If I had this and if I had that. Never satisfied with what God has given them.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that bless his heart, Jacob hung around for 14 years for Rachel, and it's like, here's how grateful I am. Mm-hmm. But how faithful, I mean, he got angry, but it's like, you know, come on, woman. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been out here working for 14 years, and I love you, and I would have done nothing. I would have done nothing to get Leah, mm-hmm. but that was not my intent to start with. And so, you know, again, the family conflict that you see there, as Jane mentioned in the beginning, mm-hmm. and it, you still see it throughout history.
Yes, you do.
Because of the, quote unquote, walking in the flesh and not trusting God. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree, absolutely, yeah. Another interesting thing that a commentator brought up that I had not considered, it goes along the lines of something that Terry said last week, but that when you look at the future of the children, the ones that came from Leah played much larger roles than the others, other than Joseph, as far as the future of an importance of what happened in Israel, which this particular commentator took it to mean that it was by God's providence, not that God caused Laban to lie, but through God's sovereignty, he saw to it that Leah was the one that married Jacob, because that was the one that God chose for her, for him. And that her offspring are the ones that God's name was more proclaimed through than anybody else. So it was worth something. It was something I figured that I would look into afterwards and consider further. Because I just ran into it today. It wasn't enough time for me to do a lot of research on it. But it was an interesting thought. So, because we do know that, you know, when you, God's sovereignty, he comes in and he does things that it looks like it was in man's hand. But, you know, it's just like the scripture says, and I think it is in Proverbs, is the casting of the lot is in the hand of man, but it's every decision comes from God. You know, you roll the dice, but whether you get snake eyes or whatever you get, that's God's decision, not yours, you know? So, yes, Doris.
With Jacob himself, he wasn't giving up on the fact that he wanted to return to where God had told him.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't going to stay there.
Indefinitely.
He'd already completed what he had promised to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he wanted to return rather than continue on, although, you know, Laban was saying, I know which side my bread is buttered on, so mm-hmm. I'm going to try and keep you around because I'm gaining from this mm-hmm. in a big way. But I think Jacob was wise and finished it and seemed saying, I'm going back to my country.
Yeah.
Which is the promised land.
Yeah. If he had stuck with that, he probably would have been even more wise. But yes, you're right. I agree. Terry, were you raising your hand or no?
A side thought, but now I don't know
what it was. Okay. If it comes to you, say it. Did you have something?
No.
No? Okay. All right. Sorry. Well, what I have here is Rachel, of course, blames Jacob for not getting pregnant, which, of course, is silly. Doris brought up, you know, if... you know, Jacob loved her more than anybody else, so if there's anybody he would have held out on, it would have been Leah. So, and Jacob says it was God's judgment on her. Common practice of surrogate mothering was a common practice back then. So it was not something unusual that these women would have automatically resorted to giving their handmaids to their husband as a wife. So Bilhah, of course, was given to Jacob, and Bilhah, actually, her name means troubled, which, of course, describes her whole life. Bilhah, of course, conceives. Her first child is Dan, which that name means a judge. And so she said, you know, God has judged my case and he has also heard my voice and given me a son, as though Rachel felt like that this was God's stamp of approval on her. And of course it really was not, but that's the way she took it, because you notice the real problem here was that what these people were doing and why they were doing it, their motives were terrible. Almost the entire time it was terrible, and I'll get into that in just a second. Bilhah conceived a second time, gives birth to Naphtali. Then Rachel said, with great wrestlings I've wrestled with my sister, and indeed I have prevailed. So you notice that Leah's initial desire for children was to be noticed and loved by her husband. Rachel's desire was to compete with her sister. Mm-hmm. These are radically different, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Now, Leah jumps into the fray because now she reciprocates by giving Zilpah, to Jacob. You notice that she didn't even consider doing that until Rachel did it. Mm-hmm. Now, when Rachel did it and offspring came, Leah's like, well, then I'll one-up you. You know, so she throws her handmaid into the mix. So in here, you know, people are being spent like currency. So Leah now reciprocates by giving Zilpah to Jacob, and she conceives Gad, which means good fortune or a troop, either one. Leah seems to become a little too sure of herself, a little arrogant and competitive in return for what Rachel had done, because she made this antagonistic announcement, behold, a troop comes, you know. It's a little sure of yourself, you know, you're not exactly sure how this is going to turn out, but it's you know, it's rubbing it in her sister's face. And it's very antagonistic, if nothing else. Then Asher is born, which means happy. But the source of Leah's happiness is not a good one. Leah's happiness is based on superficial value assigned to her by other women. She said, other women will call me blessed because I have these many kids. It's not because of God. It's not even because of the love of my husband, which she's pretty much almost given up on in some way. She hadn't quite yet because of a statement we hear later. But at least other women are going to look at me and think great about me. And I tell you, we are so shallow sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, our desires, and you know, and Jesus spoke to her. Remember, I'll bring this up right to the end of my life, is that when Jesus said, you know, how can you believe you who seek honor from man? Mm-hmm. You just cut yourself off from having, walking in actual relational trust with God, because man's become more important, right? So this was not a good thing. Reuben, at the age of about 4, found the mandrakes, which, of course, was a type of aphrodisiac, which we said before. Their common name was actually love apples. He brought them to Leah's mother. Rachel asked for them. Leah blows up and says, you know, is it a small matter that you've taken away my husband? Would you also take away my son's mandrakes as well? So Rachel seems confident that she has the power to barter Jacob to influence him to have sex with Leah, and so just plainly says, Jacob will lay with you tonight. As, you know, she clearly felt like she had authority over her husband. And evidently, Jacob must have thought so too, because he let it happen. He allowed himself to be manipulated by his wives. That was a very poor choice. But nonetheless, that's what happened. So Rachel seemed confident and bartered off her husband for some mandrakes. Leah seems to agree with Rachel's power over Jacob, because when Jacob came out of the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, you must come into me. I bought you from Rachel. This is a screwed up family. And authority isn't where it belongs. And Jacob's like, oh, okay. Just runs with it.
Look at how fickle Rachel was. Yeah, she said, she blames him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she's not having any babies. And then what she does, she turns around and says, you know, be with my sister.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, woman.
Yeah. And you know, and Jacob in his own way isn't a whole lot better. You know what I mean? They all got their problems, don't they, you know? So Jacob complies. Leah conceives. Now, evidently, either passively in her heart or actively by actual prayer, Leah desired that God bless her and bless this particular union with yet another child, and God complied. It says that God listened to her and blessed her with a child. And Issachar was born, and that Issachar means there is recompense. So you can tell what was in Leah's heart by wanting this done. Again, she felt slighted, and so she felt like there was a need for recompense. So that's what she named her son. You can imagine how these boys grew up a little bit tweaked, if nothing else, but because of the reason why they were named, what they were named. Mm-hmm. Leah conceives a sixth son now named Zebulun, which is exalted. And Leah has a daughter named Dinah, which means judgment. Now, Rachel is considered by God. He answers her prayers, and she conceives her first kid and bears Joseph, which means Jehovah has added. And, of course, we know from knowing the scriptures that because it wasn't because who Joseph was in it, who he was in and of himself, but who he came from, that Jacob loved him more than any of the others, which is just so sad. You know, I mean, he had He had all these sons that he could have invested himself in. And I'm not saying that he didn't on some level or another, but he poured himself into Joseph so much so that it was obvious to everybody, you know? And the whole reason was because of who it came from. He's still doughy-eyed over Rachel and considers the other ones just, you know, extra. There's not a whole lot there. Now, Jacob intends to leave, but Laban begs him to stay. Laban's desire for prosperity he enjoyed through association with Jacob was made clear by his statement. But if you go on down, you read starting verse 26 through 33, he tells him to give me my wives and give me my children and stuff like that. And Laban begs him not to go, tells me, you know, whatever you want, name your wages and I'll give it to you. And so he says, you know, let me go through the sheep today and pick up. Essentially, what he was wanting to do is, and I don't know what the purpose for this was, but back then, obviously, sheep and goats that were lighter skinned and were of a solid color were prized above the others. And so Laban thought this was a great deal. You take all the darker ones and all the spotted ones, and I'll take all the lighter solid color ones, and that's going to be... And even if that meant that Jacob had more than he did, quality meant more than quantity in some respect to him. So this obviously had something to do with it, because he was glad to have it. And I don't think that Jacob would have made this deal if all the spotted ones were considered to be the best of the best, and I don't think Laban would have gone for it if they were. You know what I'm saying? So we're kind of reading into it just a tad, but not a lot. And he says in verse 33, in the future, when you come to check on my wages, because I know you will, because you always do. When you do, my honesty will testify on my behalf, right? If I have any female goats that are not speckled or spotted, or any lambs that are not black, then they will be considered stolen from you. However, Laban separated them himself. He didn't allow Jacob to do it. And he caused his sons to tend Jacob's sheep at a great distance, 3 days away, while Jacob tended Laban's sheep. Now, I can only speculate as to the reasons for this, but I think that I'm on solid ground when I say that what Laban was doing was letting Jacob, I don't think that he was stealing the sheep that he just agreed to give to Jacob. He just was separating them. And he did not want Jacob to have any control over these spotted sheep. Because if he didn't, you have a tendency to read into another person's personality your own flaws. And Laban was not a trustworthy man. And so he looked at Jacob and said, untrustworthy. And so he says, okay, I'll give you all the spotted ones, but you can't control how they breed. Because you, if you have control over it, you're going to take all of yours and breed them with mine, and there's going to be more spotted and speckled than the good kind. So I'm going to take all these away and have my sons shepherd your sheep, and you shepherd mine. You see what I'm saying? And that way, anything that is born, and not only that, but Laban was also trying, in his mind, trying to control, well, if all he's got left are light-skinned, solid-skinned goats and sheep, he's going to wind up producing very few, if any, speckled. And so, therefore, I've got it in good. Not a problem. I took his terms. I agreed to it. But I'm controlling the outcome because I'm not going to let Jacob keep the spotted ones anywhere near the light-colored, solid-colored ones. So there's nothing in the passage that indicates that Laban was breaking his agreement with Jacob at this point. He was just controlling the outcome. Are you following? So, Jacob, it was considered in that day to be true that whatever a sheep or a goat was fixated upon during copulation would affect the character or the appearance of the offspring. That was the reason for the shaved sticks. Because the shaved sticks, you know, what he would do is he got maple and a few other that were very, very white on the inside, but the outside, the bark, was dark. And so we'd strip it off so that there was some white and some dark apparent. Mm-hmm. And we'd put it in there with their food and in their water so that when they were feeding, a lot of times, evidently, the female ewes, when they're feeding, they're not warding off the male, and so the male will just come up and take care of themselves while the girls are feeding. Mm-hmm. So that's where he put it, right there. So while they would be copulating while they were looking at the speckled, spotted sticks. And it was a common belief in that day that that would affect the offspring. In other words, he was trying to use folklore to control whether or not he had speckled, spotted offspring. That's what he wanted. Obviously, God blessed this. You know, God will often bless dumb ideas. Not because of the fact that he necessarily agrees with them, but because of the fact that if God's favor is resting on someone, you know, a great example is Ishmael. He blessed Ishmael. But was Ishmael God's idea? No, it was not God's idea. But did he bless it? Yes, because of who it was associated with. So did God bless this idea, even though there's absolutely no science to it whatsoever? Yeah, apparently he did. Because in the end, the prosperity of Jacob is attributed to God's own hand. So obviously God caused the sheep and these goats to produce speckled offspring who were looking at these you know, speckled pieces of wood that was in the troughs when they were feeding and drinking. So anyway, now the only thing that was underhanded, that I could claim is underhanded, about what Jacob did was once he got some speckled and spotted sheep and goats, he at that point, of course, separated them, which was part of the agreement. He said, whatever is born like this is mine, and whatever isn't is yours, right? So he separated what was his. Well, that's a good thing in a way, because the fact that his honor, he said, you know, later on when you question me, my honor will testify for itself. I separated the sheep, and none of my sheep and goats mingled with yours. And so all the ones that were either produced by my own or because yours by themselves produced speckled offspring. Are you following? Mm-hmm. So he was very, very diligent about that. But you'll notice if you read through it, he specifically did two things. He made sure that his flock was facing away from Laban's flock, because he did not want, because evidently it worked in reverse. If his speckled flock was looking at the solid colors, they would give solid color offspring. He didn't want that to happen. But he did see to it that Laban's were facing his. So he's making sure that mine are going to always make speckled and spotted, and as many as his will make speckled and spotted as well as I can get. And then once they were born, the strong ones, he would start putting those stripped pieces of wood in Laban's feeding troughs, but only in the strong ones. So when those goats kidded and when those lambs gave birth to offspring, only the strong ones would give off spotted and speckled and dark color, so that the greater and the stronger and the healthier would all be his. So he did that on purpose. So that was a little underhanded. Because, you know, if he was really, really trusting the Lord, he would have treated them both the same and allowed God to decide the outcome, right? Mm-hmm. But instead, he was doing everything he could to manipulate things. So that was a problem. But, you know, in the end, God still honored him, right? I mean, we can see that for sure. So now, in chapter 31, let's go ahead and read chapter 31. Does anybody else have any other thoughts about chapter 30? Did I clear up any issues that you may have had, any questions that you may have had? Mm-hmm. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Then I'll go ahead and read chapter 31. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has acquired all this wealth. And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and indeed it was not favorable towards him as before. Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your father's, and to your family, and I will be with you. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field in his to the field to his flock, and he said to them, "I see your father's countenance, that it is not favorable towards me as it was before. But the Lord, but the God of my father, has been with me, and you know that with all my might I have served your father. Yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times." But God did not allow him to hurt me. If he said, thus the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flocks were speckled. And if he said, thus the streaked ones will be your wages, then all the flocks bore streaked. Now what he's leaving out there was that he did everything he could to manipulate that as he could, right? Mm-hmm. He's leaving that part out, but he is at least giving credit to God for helping him out. That's no credit, no doubt, I mean. So God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. And it happened at the time when the flocks conceived that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped leaped upon the flocks were streaked, speckled, and gray spotted. Then the angel of God spoke to me in a dream, saying, Jacob, and I said, here I am. And he said, lift up your eyes now and see. All the rams which leap on the flocks are streaked, speckled, and gray spotted. For I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land and return to the land of your family. Now we're going to see as we continue on that God had to say this to him another time. One wasn't enough. But, you know, he'd already determined to do this a few years before and got sidetracked by Laban. Now God's telling him to do it, and he decides to, but then he gets sidetracked, and God has to tell him it again later. And we'll see that several chapters later, but we're not going to see it tonight, of course. He says, I'm the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar and where you made the vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land, and return to the land of your family. Then Rachel and Leah both... Now this is the only time in recorded history that I know of that these two agreed with one another. Okay? So hold on to it, because this is about as good as it ever gets.
Right.
Then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, is there still any portion or inheritance for us among our father's house? Are we not considered strangers to him? For he has sold us and also completely consumed our money. For all these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. Then Jacob arose and set his sons and his wives on camels. I did not make this in my notes, so I'll make this note now while we're in transit reading through the chapter. I like the fact that he took counsel with his wives. I think that's a wise decision for any man. I don't think that historically he was that wise because I think sometimes he allowed himself to be dictated to. That's not okay. But it was wise that he at least sought the counsel of his wife and brought things up before them. I think that that's commendable, and I think it says it should be. And God himself, you know, told Abraham that you need to listen to your wife, Sarah, right? So I think this was good, but, you know, I think that it went to an extreme in Jacob's life that was not good. Now Jacob rose and set his sons and his wives on camels, and they carried away all of his livestock and all of his possessions, which he had gained, his acquired livestock, which he had gained in Padan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. And, sorry, what?
I said great.
Oh, I know. Yeah, thanks. Were her father's. You notice how she's acting unilaterally. She never really acts like she is under or accountable to her husband. She's a live wire, right? And yet, Jacob, for all of this, is blind to it and stays love-struck by the woman his entire life. Now Laban had gone to shear the sheep, and Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. And Jacob stole away, unknowing to Laban, the Syrian, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. So he fled with all that he had. He arose and crossed over the river and headed down the mountains of Gilead. And Laban was told on the third day that Jacob had left. Then he took his brethren with him and pursued him for 7 days' journey. So 10 days into Jacob's flight, right? A 7-day journey, and he overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. But God had come to Laban, the Syrian, in a dream by night and said, be careful, watch out, that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad. So Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountains, and Laban with his brethren pitched their tents in the mountains of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, What have you done? What have you done that you have stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with the sword? Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me? For I might have sent you away with joy and songs and timbrel and harp, and you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now you have done foolishly in so doing. It is in my power to do you harm, but the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad. And now you have surely gone because you greatly long for your father's house. But why did you steal my gods? Then Jacob answered and said to Laban, because I was afraid, for I said, perhaps you would take my your daughters from me by force. Let's see. With whomever you find your gods, do not let him live. In the presence of our brethren, identify what I have of yours and take it with you. For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. And Laban went into Jacob's tent, into Leah's tent, and into the two maids' tents, but he did not find them. Then he went out to went out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the household idols, put them in the camel's saddle, and sat on them. And Laban searched all about the tent and did not find them. And she said to her father, "Let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of women is with me." And he searched, and he did not find the household idols. Then Jacob was angry and rebuked Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, "What is my trespass? What is my sin that you have so hotly pursued me? Although you have searched all my things, what part of your household things have you found? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren, that I may that they may judge between us both. These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried their young. I have not eaten the rams of your flock. What was torn by beast I did not bring to you, but I bore the loss of it myself. You required it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was in the night. The drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sheep departed from my eyes. Thus I have been in your house 20 years. I served you 14 for your two daughters, 6 years after your for your flocks, and you have changed my wages 10 times. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, the fear of Isaac, had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night." And Laban answered and said to Jacob, "These daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and this flock is my flock. All that you see belongs to me. But what can I do this day to these my daughters or to their children whom they have borne? Now therefore, come, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me." So Jacob took a stone and set up a pillar. And Jacob said to his brethren, "Gather stones." And they took up stones and made a heap, and they ate there on the heap. Laban then called it Jeger Shahad Utha, which is essentially the same, means the same thing as Gilead. But Jacob called it Gilead. Both of them just means heaped up. And Laban said, "This heap is a witness between you and me this day. Therefore, its name shall be Gilead." So also Mizpah, because he said, "May the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent from one another. If you afflict my daughters, or if you take other wives besides my daughters, although no man is with us, see, God is a witness between you and me." Then Laban said to Jacob, Here is this heap, and here is this pillar which I have placed between you and me. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness, that I will not pass beyond this heap to you, and you will not pass beyond this heap and beyond this pillar to me for harm. The God of Abraham, the gods of Nahor, and the God of their father judge between us. And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Jacob. I mean his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his brethren to eat bread, and they ate bread and stayed all night on the mountain. And early in the morning Laban arose, kissed his sons, his daughters, and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned to his place. So this is a big chapter, but it only really covers a couple of things. So what are your thoughts?
Self-explanatory.
Yeah, a good portion of it is, but if you have any thoughts.
God was watching.
God was watching. God definitely pays attention, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Not only to the people that we see that are in the limelight, but the people that aren't, right? None of them are invisible to God. Mm. What else?
It makes it hard for me to think that Rachel, she makes reference to Jacob's God, but yet whenever she takes the idols, what's her purpose of taking those idols?
Mm-hmm.
Is it because she has some attachment to that and her beliefs, or because of, she's thinking it's something that might benefit her father and if she leaves them, that would cause problems later on in her life. I don't know. But either way, she's got such a mixture of speech. It's like a forked tongue.
Yes, I agree.
Double-minded man. In
other words. Yeah, and I think that some of that will become clear in the next couple of chapters. But without question, I think that coupled together with other intentions may very well have been a way of just getting back at her father. Because it was very clear that she was bitter. On some level, both her and Leah made it very clear to Jacob, our father has spent our entire inheritance. He sold us to you. You know, we have nothing left here anyway. You know, those are not words of, well, be kind to my father because, you know, even if you have problems, your problems are between you and him, but, you know, my father still loves me and, you know, blah, blah. There's none of that. It was all, sure, let's go. You know, he sold us and he spent our inheritance. What do we have here? Obviously, they didn't see their father as a reason to stay, So I don't think there's any lost love between Rachel and her dad, at least not on Rachel's side. So it may have been a vindictive thing, at least in part. So what else?
Okay, I'll ask.
Well, you know, I can't think you just kind of answered it.
Oh, did he?
Well, indirectly without me asking.
Go ahead. Just ask it.
The reason Rachel didn't get up.
Because she was having a period.
Okay,
but she wasn't.
But
she lied.
That's what that was the question we had. Yes. Was she just saying that so she didn't want to get up?
No, she was lying.
That's okay.
Yeah.
She did this
on purpose because she knew the camel she was sitting on had the idols in it.
That's what I was thinking, but I wasn't sure if that's
That's what we were thinking when we read it over earlier.
Yeah. Now, I can't be absolutely certain that she was lying, but she definitely put her butt there on purpose. What I'm saying? So, maybe she was in that time, and that's why she sat there, or she sat there and claimed it so she wouldn't have to get up and they wouldn't find the idols. Yeah. But one way or the other, she was being deliberately deceptive.
And they would not have made her, he would not have
made her. Oh, no. That's okay, you stay right there.
Yeah.
That's right. So,
gross.
Yeah. So, but you're right. Your supposition was correct. What else, huh?
Also, God spoke to Laban. That's...
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. God spoke to Laban.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that God's words, I did not spend the time to look those particular words up, but I'm thinking that those words probably mean something different than the surface value of the words. Because if the words really mean what they said, then Laban couldn't have said anything to Jacob. Because if you say something, it's either going to be good or bad, and nothing happened bad to Laban for speaking. I think it had more to do with don't make a threat with your words or don't make a promise of good or evil to him. In other words, I'm separating the two of you, and anything you've got to say about his future is going to fall on deaf ears because I'm not going to allow it to happen, is probably the meaning behind the words. So, but you can see all the way through it, Laban is arrogant. And, he makes it very clear, I could do you harm. Don't make any mistake about that. It's only because I'm such a man of integrity, because your God spoke to me, that I'm not doing it, And make no mistake, those daughters, they are my daughters. And make no mistake, those children, they might be your kids, but they're my kids. And all the sheep, they're mine. They belong to me. If I didn't let you take them, then what would be there for my children and my grandchildren? So I'm going to let you have them. It's the way the world is. We love to toot our own horn because we are so perfect. So, pretty sick stuff.
And again, Rachel didn't communicate with her husband. Mm-hmm. Don't tell my father that I've got these.
Yeah.
Because she probably, I'm going to do my own thing here.
Yeah. Yeah, she did. She definitely didn't tell him.
Jacob would have told Laban that he...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
And he wouldn't have said, kill him. You're right. You're right. Jacob would have said something. At least based on everything we can see about his character, So after 2 years of service, Jacob makes his departure ready. Rachel robs from Laban the idols. Jacob deceived Laban by not telling him his intent to leave. Now, this is important. The Bible called that deception. What he did not say was deception. That tells us about morality. I don't know how many times I've heard from a Christian's mouth, well, I didn't say so, I didn't lie, I just didn't tell him. God calls that deception. Right? It's not what Jacob said, it's what he failed to tell him that was called deception, right?
Wow. Yeah.
So that's important. Yeah. Jacob was intimidated by his father-in-law and relatives, still not fully trusting God to protect him. It's a real family problem. Mm-hmm. Rachel plays the female card and subverts justice for her father. Laban claims that claims all is his, though he had actually given them to Jacob for his labors. They decide to make a pact. Both of them call the heap of rocks two different names. The one was Jeger Shahad Utha, which is an Aramaic word for a witness heap. Jacob called it Gilead, which is Hebrew for a witness heap. So they both called it witness heap. So it wasn't any different, it's just a different language. Mizpah means a watchtower or a lookout. They ate a covenant meal, and then they departed in peace from one another. I want you to see also that one thing that was interesting was that Jacob bore the loss of things that were stolen or things that were torn by wild beasts. He could have lied about that too, because he was the only one out there who would have known, right? But he bore the loss himself. That tells us something about his character. Again, he had no problem trusting God in areas where it had to do with prosperity. You know, what does it matter to me? I'll just have more sheep. It's no big deal. also, notice that, and I mentioned this once before, you know, when we looked at Isaac in his life, his connection with God seemed fleeting at best. It didn't really, when you look at Abraham, his father, you would think, well, Isaac would be talking about God all the time. And there'd be a lot, you know, there would be just more substance to Isaac. And yet when you actually look at Isaac, what is told us in Scripture, he hardly ever talks about God or even mentions him. But his son always refers to the God of Isaac as the fear, as though that was the term that his father always called him, the fear. You notice here, two or three times here in this one passage alone, it was the God of Abraham, the fear of Isaac, right? And you do see that terminology with Isaac. So it tells me that there was God had revealed himself to Isaac, there's no question, but the only thing that I think that Isaac really walked away with largely was a respect for God. That's what the word fear meant, the fear. So he referred to God as the fear. And that's what Jacob grew up knowing God as. And so it's no wonder when God met him, he kind of came to God with a caveat. Well, if you do everything you said you're going to do, you'll be my God. Right? So, because all I ever knew him as was the fear of my father. So, you know, what we do with those that we have an influence over affects their view of God, doesn't it? So until they can have an encounter of their own, our encounter is the only thing creating a handshake with God. And either it's going to entice them to meet him or stay away, right? So anyway, that's pretty much all I think that there was to get out of that chapter there. But it still shows God's provision, and it shows God's intervention, and it also shows integrity there, at least in regard to his trust for God concerning provision. So anybody else have any other thoughts?
I just think it's interesting where, you know, Jacob refers to it as who his father feared, Mm-hmm. But Jacob is questioning whether can I trust you or can I not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, he wasn't fearful in that respect.
No.
But, you know, because he knew it. Abraham wasn't that way. His grandfather wasn't like that. So he's kind of riding the fence.
Yeah, he is.
Knowing exactly what to do. So.
Yeah.
He's testing the water. Can I trust you? Are you going to do what you say you're going to do? We're going to find out here.
That's right. And you notice that the way God dealt with each one of the offspring was by essentially putting them on their own, so that with a promise, so that their faith had to be their own faith, not riding on the faith of their father. Are you following?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of important, because the fact that this is one of the ways that was necessary at the very, very beginning. Because in the very beginning, you know, they didn't have what we have. We have a huge history to look back upon. Generations upon generations of people that trusted God. We have both modern and ancient examples. They had grandpa and dad. That's all they had. And back in grandpa had nobody. He was grandpa. You know, there was nothing to draw upon. And so, you know, God is dealing with these men individually. I'll get on you in just a second. Dealing with these men individually. And so God was trying to circumvent what we've talked about in here before, in that second generational faith, where, you know, the first generation has an encounter with God. The second generation lives under the shadow of that, but never has their own encounter. And so they keep on going through the motions and doing all the stuff, but they never actually see the deliverance that God offers. You know, it's all second generation, secondhand information. And they don't actually ever have to have God come through for them, because they're living off the skirt tails of their parents, right? And so there is no stepping forward, right? And by the third generation, they're looking at this and thinking, there's nothing to this. You know, the only thing that might have had something going was grandpa. And I don't really have any proof of that, because all I have is some stories of a senile man when I was a child. I don't know whether to believe that or not. I know it scared you, Dad, but, you know, your whole life hasn't proven anything to me about this thing. So, I don't know. And he had to go out on his own, but it was on his own. He encountered God, but he still is like, you know what, I know what you said, and I'll believe it when I see it. If you do all the things you said, I'll make you my God. Right? And, of course, he did. But you notice how God was doing things deliberately to keep each one of these generations from living and assuming second-generation faith. They had to own it for themselves. Yes, Doris?
Use a phrase when you were speaking about going through the motions. What do you think that's what was going on in Jacob's mind in the sacrifice?
No, because he met God then. He had an encounter then that was unique. He had the dream and the angels coming up and down. So, yeah, he at that point, he said he was scared. So at that point, which was probably on purpose, because the fact that allowed him to identify immediately with the father, his father's God, you know, the fear of Isaac. But no, I think that it was beginning. He definitely had a respect for God at that point, but he wasn't ready to make him his God, which was very clear by his own words. But yeah, I agree that at that point, because he'd had his own encounter, yes, at that point it began the potential for relationship. And God initiated it, which is another truth we can draw out of that, is that God initiates all relationship. Always initiates it. The Bible says that no man can come to the Father unless he first draw them. Now, once you've been drawn, once you've responded to that and have become a child, at that point, if you draw near to God, he'll draw near to you. But the initial relationship is always started by God. He always starts it. He didn't wait for Abraham to start it. He didn't wait for Isaac to start it. And he didn't wait for Jacob. God showed up in all cases and initiated the drawing. It was up to them to respond. So that's an important thing. The Bible tells us, and we don't have to be concerned about it. The Bible in John, the first chapter, tells us that Jesus was the light of the world, and he gives light to every man who comes into the world. There is nobody that God does not draw. There isn't anybody. Yes.
Still not that significant father question, because so did he get this want to sacrifice on mountain and ask his brothers to come and bread with him?
Mm-hmm.
Brethren. Did that not include Rachel and Leah?
I don't have any idea.
Or
I don't know. Probably not, because the fact that particularly in that day, things were much more patriarchal, and so because a decision was being made that had to be followed through with authority, it wouldn't have been necessary. But I doubt that they were excluded from being at the ceremony, but I don't think it would have been required for them to be there. It probably was specifically designed. And, you know, if Laban had other daughters other than the two that he married, I don't know it. But if he did, he probably didn't bring them to chase after Jacob. But one way or the other, it's clear that Jacob was, if Laban had other daughters, he wasn't afraid of them. He was afraid of his sons. So that was definitely the one he wanted the agreement with, even more than Laban. Laban was important, but it was his young sons he was probably a whole lot more concerned about, you know? So, you know, because at this point, you know, Laban was getting up there in age. He was less of a concern. But his boys, he was outnumbered, right? So I think he was very concerned about that. So yes, that would be my belief. But I can't be dogmatic.
Yeah, I didn't know.
So,
it was just a cultural thing or something.
Yeah, like mankind is referring to all genders. Yeah, and I don't know that it's not saying that. But more than likely, because it's an oath, it was probably to the sons, more than likely. So, and you notice that they weren't too particular about what God they invited to this oath, right? I mean, they included those, but they also said the gods of Haran. I mean, you know that Abraham's father's God was not God. It was his brother's God was not God. It was the gods of Chaldea. You know, the moon god and the sun god and whatever other gods that the Chaldeans kind of threw in the mix. He said, you know, they threw them all in there, you know. They made this oath before the God, your God, the God of the fear of Isaac, the God of Abraham, the gods of, Nahor, the gods of Nahor. We were writing all of them. All of them are witness to this, right? So there wasn't a whole lot of discretion going on there. Anybody else have something? Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just thinking, even from the fall, probably, this is just the mindset that of what God told Eve, that your desire should rule over your husband, but he's going to rule over you. That mindset probably went down more and more, because you see a lot of, especially in the Arab nations,
mm-hmm.
where the women are not, they're separated, they're, they're not allowed in council, even in the prayer groups, and
mm-hmm.
even in the Jewish culture, the women had their own place after the law came.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it wasn't after the law came.
Well,
I mean, it was after the law, but it wasn't because of the law.
No.
Okay.
No, it was after the law. You see in the temple, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying that you
synagogues.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that because you said it wasn't until after the law, it could be understood by that it was because of the law.
Yeah.
And a lot of the discrimination that took place against women was man-made, not God-made.
Yes.
God did say things that the modern woman today would look at and say that's sexist, and God doesn't really care what they say. But there are other things that became Jewish traditions of men, God never said, and they were dishonest and disreputable towards women. One of them was the way that they treated their wives. I mean, I remember when Jesus was confronted by the Pharisees. And the Pharisee says, can a woman, can a man divorce a woman for just any cause? And he said, no. In fact, divorce was never God's plan. He said, he said, the only reason why you have that is because the hardness of your heart Moses allowed it. He said, but from the beginning, Jesus going back to Genesis again, it was not so. And he said, I'm telling you, any man that divorces his wife for any reason other than adultery is in sin. But in their day, a Jewish man, if a woman were to cook a meal that displeased him, he could divorce her for it. That was man-made laws. It was brutality against women. And God never supported such horrible things. In fact, God said that's one of the reasons why the men's prayers were hindered, is because they had dealt treacherously with their wives and because they were not dwelling with understanding with their wives. So God hates that stuff, right? When God did set rules up that may seem like they were slanted towards men, they were also a provision for women. He was never against his women, that's for sure. So, I know that wasn't your thought either. I was just going further with it.
Yeah, but I'm glad you did that.
So, any other thoughts before we close? No? Okay, well, next one, chapter 32. Now, go ahead and read the next couple of chapters, maybe the next three chapters. We may only deal with the next chapter. It depends. I've got to go back through it again. But this one is kind of important because it's the way Jacob is dealing with going back and running into his brother Esau. He's still scared. He believes God will prosper him, but he does not believe God will protect him.
33 so, is about Esau too, so they probably will go together.
Yeah, they probably will. So, anyway, hopefully we're still learning things.
Oh, I love it, yeah.
All right.